Welcome to Holden Village. Today in the incredible Creekside Room, today's speaker is Verlin Brown. He will be speaking on the myth of male power. So let's listen in on Verlin Brown.
I was just going to say that I'm not denying any of the things that I talk about. I'm not denying that women don't have to deal with rejection, that women don't have to deal with powerlessness or any of that stuff. All I'm saying is that men have to deal with it as well. And oftentimes, when you read feminist literature, it makes it look like men have all the power and women have none. And that a lot of our power, true enough, is financial. We'll stand. And I'll go through this, and it's done in silence. And if you've had experienced any of this, you just stand up, and then I'll ask you to sit down. Okay. The first one is if you've ever worried that you weren't tough enough, please stand up.
Can you define that a little better?
You're not limited.
You mean exercising physical control over another human being, Ron?
Yeah, just whatever it means to be tough for you. If you've ever worried that you weren't tough enough, stand up.
Of course, if you know you weren't tough, you don't have to worry about that.
Okay, you may see. If you've ever exercised to make yourself tougher, please say. If you've ever been disrespected by an adult, please say.
Oh, yeah.
If you've ever been called a wimp, a queer, or a fag, please stand. If you've ever been told to act like a man, please stay. If you've ever had an obligation to defend your country by fighting, please stand.
In the military?
Yeah, I guess.
So I was in, but it wasn't
working.
Well, I was in, but it wasn't working.
Stand up anyway. Stand up anyway.
See, if you've ever been afraid that you would be called upon to defend your country, please stand. If you've ever been hit by an older man, please stand. If you've ever been forced to fight, please stand. If you've ever wished that you didn't have to work a 40-hour week and could stay home, time with your children, please stand. If you've ever been injured on the job, please stand. If you've ever been, or I'll skip that one. If you've ever been arrested, please stay. The last one is, if you ever felt that you had to hurt another person physically, please stay.
Let me make a comment on this question there. Some of them were physical actions and some of them were mental attitudes. And I think the two should be kept apart there.
Well, the reason I did, because some things are physical, some things are mental. And the reason I did it was to capture the male experience, to capture what men have to deal with. What were some feelings? You felt that they should be, things should be separated. You know, I'll just put.
Yeah, because the mental attitudes are so much come from within, how comfortable you are with yourself.
Okay.
And the physicals that you mention frequently come from without, things you don't have control
of. Okay. Anyone else had any feelings about this as we went through, or thoughts or whatever?
What separated them?
The physical and the mental.
Yeah.
The emotional, I guess.
It's emotional, yeah. One I'm saying, hey, it comes from within a person, how you feel about yourself. And the other one comes from without, how you relate to the society.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was very emotional until the extent the bully punched him in the nose and why there's a problem after that. But it was a very emotional time, so now you separate.
Any other feeling? You put emotional. Did you find any of this emotional, bringing back the old?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Anyone else have any feelings or just what you thought of what we did? How did it leave you? Did it leave you cold? Did it leave you?
I felt defensive, like I wanted to explain my actions. Yeah, but
okay.
Well, this is the feeling, but I found myself having to look back in my memory. Most of those, I think I had to think about my youth. I mean, maybe that's a sign of, you know, as you get older, you learn a few things, you're more independent.
I kind of think that, too. You get to be my age, you go through most of those things at one time or another, but as I've got older, I have learned to let go of the things I can't change, which has made it a lot easier for me. And then when I'm young, I try to change things I can't.
I think it relates very much now to on the job and competition with other men. There's power control issues going on all the time. I think it's continuous.
Yeah, I think I have more control now. I mean, I have more money, so I have more control. It's who can push me. I prove myself in other ways.
Okay. Any other thoughts or feelings? One of the things that this writer says is that the job is an extension. For men, the job is an extension of adolescence. Everything you go through in adolescence, you go through in the workplace. And you have to keep that going at all times. So you're always dealing with feelings of power and powerlessness on the job at all times. And he goes even further to say that that this continued on the job until women started coming into the workplace. And then when women came into the workplace, our need to protect women forced us to change some of these things. Like, men have always told dirty jokes. Men have always humiliated each other or put each other down in the workplace. But when women came in the workplace and we started doing it to women, then it became harassment. The same with, like, being a doctor or a lawyer. Doctors worked horrendous hours. But, you know, it was all a part of being a doctor until women became doctors. And then women began to say, you know, these are really ridiculous hours. So now a lot of hospitals are trying to get doctors to work more sane hours. So when I talk about powerlessness, oftentimes powerlessness means that action isn't taken until a woman says, or women says, you know, gets into the workplace, gets into a position that men have currently had, and said, wait a minute, this is insane. People are getting hurt, people are dying, people are making big mistakes. And he talks about this as powerlessness that men have to deal with, because men just automatically accept this as this is how it is, and you know, and they go on with it. I put my notes here somewhere, and I can't find them. Oh, all right. He has this thing called the six classes of women, and I'll read them off for you. Maybe I'll even write them down for you. The six classes of women is one. The one class is the married woman, never worked, no option. So I'll put no option. The second class of woman is the woman, the three option woman. The other class of woman is the single mother married to the government.
Married to what?
To the government.
Dependent on the social system?
Yeah. The fourth one is a working woman who supports her family, no child support. The fifth one is a single working woman. And the sixth one is what he calls the have-it-all woman. And he puts the have-it-all woman as she has a husband who provides economic safety. She has the three options that she wanted. She's happily married. She's considered the new royalty. And this is what he says a lot of feminists are comparing. This is where a lot of feminists see where men are. They think men are here. And he says he feels like a lot of feminists are comparing, saying, you know, we want to be royalty. Like, women are looking at the men who have made it, at successful men. That feminists aren't comparing themselves to dishwashers or janitors or, you know, that sort of thing. And he says virtually no man has it all, in the sense that no man is in a position where he has a woman who takes care of him, he's happily married, he has the three options of either working, staying home with the children, or working part-time and staying home with the children, that kind of mix. And all of this, he says, this is female power. And this is power that men simply don't have. Men do not have those that power.
Could you explain the one that number four, working woman, is that working woman, no children?
Number four, she's married to the government, she's single.
Number four.
Working woman with a child. Working woman, she's single, no children. Just a working woman.
Well, what about the working woman who is married, has to work even though she's married because either a spouse is not employed or their two incomes are necessary in order to make it, which is what a lot of people say about life today. You have to have both incomes to make it.
Would Tanya be a working mother?
Single.
Single working.
And the working woman is a working mother who's supporting a child. And what you're talking about comes in the three options, in the option thing, where women can work. That's one of the options that she takes, is that she can work. Even if she has to work, even if it's a situation where she has to work, if she gets pregnant for 2 months or so, she can't work. You know, so whether that option is good, you know, whether that, and all that means is that the man has to work even harder while she's, you know, having a child. Is that clear enough? I know you don't agree, but I'm just saying to clear it up.
Well, you were looking at work as no option, you had to do it, right?
Pardon me?
You was looking at the woman had to work, there was no option.
Yeah, you may be married, you have a family. It just takes two incomes to make it. And that's the argument I hear about all the time these days. With, you know, it used to be you could get by with one income and one person could stay home with the children, man or woman. But today they say it now takes two incomes to do that. And yes, you can take off 3 months, but most people can, some people can figure out how to make it on one income for 3 months, but over the long term, you can't make it on three.
But that's still an option that most men don't have. Most men can't say to their wives, I'm going to take off for 3 months because I need to do this, that, and the other. Society generally does not allow that.
But the law, it's the law. I mean, the law says now that women have to be given 6 weeks. Just as of this last summer, they have to be given 6 weeks. It used to be.
Fathers get that too. And some
the higher up you go, fathers get that.
But it used to be that women would get fired.
Yeah.
If they lost their jobs.
The other thing is, if a woman takes off because she's pregnant, it's got to be a joint consideration if she's married. It's got to be a joint consideration, and the woman didn't do it by herself. It really wasn't an option for her.
I'm not denying that it's a joint consideration. All I'm saying is that's an option a woman has that a man doesn't have. No matter how they get to that option, that's an option a woman has that a man does not have. You know, that's all I'm saying. So in a sense that men do not have this assortment of options, even if you take one of these away, men don't have this assortment of options when it comes to work. Men, you know, our job is to work or we're homeless. One of the two. He mentions an interesting thing about homelessness too. He says before, in the 30s and 40s, when most or almost all of the homeless people were men, they were called bums. And then when women became homeless, now they're called homeless. You know, which implies that, you know, now they're people. Before, they were just bums. You just sort of dismissed them. And his point is that society, you know, if a man doesn't work or fit into a system, society dismisses him. But as a bomb. But the moment women and children became on the streets, then we had to be a little more sensitive to it and refer to it as homeless. So the purpose of everything on here is to get at power, because women assume that men have the power. And he says the men experience powerlessness in our lives. The other thing is, I put committee, but I meant commit. Why men don't commit. And one of the reasons men don't commit is, this is a carryover from last night. We talked about female fantasy and the male fantasy. The male fantasy is to have sex with an assortment of women. The female fantasy is to have one man who pledges his life to her and then proceeds to protect her and support her and provide security for her and the children. When a woman gets married, her fantasy gets fulfilled. When a man gets married, he has to give up his fantasy. So when women ask why men don't commit, that's why men don't commit. Because men have to think twice about that, you know. Do I want to give up the power? Even if you're sitting at home eating chips most of the time. You have to think twice and say, you know, well, there is a possibility that, you know, there is a possibility that, you know, Cheryl Teagues will walk in here while I'm eating my chips. You know, so men don't want to give up that's part of our fantasy, and that's difficult for us to give up. So that's one of the reasons why we don't commit. But then we get to feelings, when we're sharing feelings, and these are not feelings we can share with women. If we share these feelings with women, women withdraw, or you know, they don't want to hear that. So men don't share certain feelings with women. Men don't share feelings with women about on-the-job stresses, because not, you know, if they share these feelings with women, since the, you know, we're talking income, since the income of a household is dependent on what the man brings in, if the man comes and complains about work, then that puts the income of the household in jeopardy, and it worries the wife of the family. So men nurture their families by not bringing that stuff home. Meanwhile, all the stuff that we talked about, this stuff up here, is still going on in the workplace. So you know, so that's part of the thing with, you know, with feelings and men sharing feelings. Men cannot let women know that they're weak. And he says something interesting. He says that if a woman is weak, she gets male attention. If a man expresses his weakness, he gets nothing. As a matter of fact, some women and a lot of men are repulsed by a man who appears weak. So her strength is in her weakness, because she can draw attention to herself. A man's weakness is in his strength, because when a man is pretending to be strong, oftentimes he's denying the facts, the things that he's afraid of, and that makes him weak. Also, when you talk about commitment, oftentimes for some people, commitment means, for a lot of couples, commitment means you put all your eggs in one basket. Meaning everything you get comes from your partner. And if all your eggs are in one basket, you know, naturally you're going to be, that's going to make that basket a little tenuous.
you know, that's going to make that whole thing a little more less free flowing than it would be if all your eggs were not in that basket. And he says that a lot of women won't even commit to sex until you commit, men commit to put all their eggs in one basket. Traditionally, women won't have sex with men until men prove either they will protect them or pay for them. And so, and the more traditional, the more commitment that they want from a relationship. What other questions? I hear heavy breathing.
No, I won't make any comment.
Okay. And all of this adds, like I said before, to the powerlessness of being a male, because you know that so much is dependent on your ability to pay and protect women that you're involved with.
I have a question. Talking about the women's fantasy mm-hmm. getting fulfilled when they get married. Mm-hmm. Now, my experience is that no matter what you do, it's not enough. I mean, like, you know, so if this is what the expectation is, then the woman will want more. There's no, you know, it's not a reality that you can, you know, the woman will never want to be able to have what you want. Whatever you have is not what you want. Mm-hmm. And I want to know, how does that fit into this?
Well, he says one of the things that that happens in society that everybody's worried about what happens if the male fantasy goes awry. You know, no one, you get very few people who don't approve of them, who most people don't approve of a man who fulfills his fantasies. A man who sleeps with an assortment of women throughout his life. We have names for those people. But if a woman, if her fantasy goes awry, meaning that she gets more and more security, more and more protection, no one says anything about that. But Pharaoh says that the extreme of either case ruins relationships and marriages. But we tend to focus on the man, his chasing women or whatever you want to call it. But we don't focus on the female who, if the husband says, let's stop at two children, and she gets pregnant a third time or even a fourth time. Or if you're continually wanting a newer house, a bigger house, a better house, or more this for the children, more that for the children, you know. And he says that the extreme of both has destroyed many a marriage and many a relationship.
Well, we idealize the constantly improving, expanding of a house or moving to a new house.
And absolutely.
Those are the points in life that we celebrate.
Absolutely. And that's why he says that when people accuse us of having a patriarchal society, what we have is a matriarchal society, in the sense that men are in the service of women. And every aspect of being a male has to do with protecting women and providing for women. And the men who are in a position to do this the most are the most celebrated. And women who get this the most are the most celebrated women, i.e. Jackie O. You know, what does she really do? You know, and I'm not putting her down. She was a good mother, apparently. She was a nice person, apparently. But when she died, you know, they made a big deal of Jackie O. What Jackie O did was marry two very wealthy men. One died giving his life to the country. Jackie O had a job working for Doubleday Books, a $10,000 a year job working for Doubleday Books. But is that worth all the attention she got when she died?
How do they mention the fact that she became a very accomplished editor?
Well, even an accomplished editor isn't worth $700 million when they die.
Well, but what I'm saying is...
Oh, okay.
That they did what she did with her life, what she did with her brain, what she wanted to do, what she wanted to accomplish was barely mentioned in her media resume. This was very important to her, but we didn't talk about that. We talked about her relationships with Harry and Jack.
Fantasy.
I think a clue, the woman said something to me a few days ago, says that all the men she comes across aren't wanting to do more of their own things, like work on their car, go to a job, or whether she wanted to spend more time supporting what she wanted to do. So this is what she looked for, men who would not spend all their time doing their own little things.
Yeah.
Working too hard.
Yeah.
She would have a hard time finding it.
Were you gonna say something?
No, I was just
No, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm the woman. I'm sorry. Okay. I shouldn't call you the woman. Speak up! Okay.
They've increased by 100%.
I'm being taken over.
Yesterday we talked about the issue of companionship came up, I think, or at least someplace. And I don't know where that fits into the equation.
Say that again, the issue?
Companionship, you know, whether that...
Well, it still fits into the fact that for a lot of men, companionship depends on your wallet. It depends on, you know, you can attract companions depending on how much money you throw out there. Yeah. And companionship's a wonderful thing. I'm not putting that down. But a lot of our relationships, if you're men, depend on you supporting.
Well, I'm wondering about that too, because there are a lot of people that we have a relationship with that's not connected to the fantasy at all. I mean, people that you genuinely enjoy talking to, but there's no agenda about sleeping with that person down the road.
Yeah.
They have no agenda about me taking care of them down the road.
Yeah.
But there's that time period where you're really safe with each other, and that's a really authentic relationship.
Yes. Yeah, that happens a lot, you know. But we don't marry those people.
Right, because the agenda of the fantasy isn't disrupted.
But the tension comes from the fact that maybe that's the person that makes the best permanent partner. We may suspect it or we may not, but there's that hidden potential that we don't take or sometimes don't take, and that leads to unhappiness because of this, the dynamics.
Well, you know, if you're married and you have a genuine relationship with another woman, like, no agenda sleeping together, no agenda being taken care of, there's still then a dynamic about you're seeing multiple women. Maybe not sleeping with them, but you're seeing multiple women. And one of the questions I have about this is, well, now, the one you're married to may get jealous of your time with these other women.
And why do you think that is?
Not all their eggs in one basket.
These other women become a threat to the money, to your wallet. You know, you may be tempted to buy them something or give them something.
Well, maybe. Is the emotional.
Well, emotional too. I mean
it's not the size of wallet, it's the size of your time. It's just your energy, your personal energy. They say the more you love, the more you have to give, but there's also the concept that it's a zero-sum thing. If you're spending, 5 minutes with this person and 5 minutes with that person, then that's five less minutes with your wife or with your family.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a money thing, it's an emotional thing, it's a time thing. The more you spend with that person, the less is over here adding to her feelings
I still said that's then what you said before is if it goes too far, the woman's fantasy gets, it can be too much of a good thing, then that destroys relationships.
Yeah, yeah. But our society focuses on the men chasing women element. You know, very seldom do you hear or read articles about men who feel like their wives just want it too much. Now, you hear it a lot from men. If you talk to men, you hear it a lot from men. What does she want now? You know, that kind of thing.
Well, do you feel that society has dictated a lot of these things, or do you feel that this is just the way people are, is why they're that way?
Well, you know, it's six and one half a dozen of the other. Society dictates. We have roles that society has us play. The men have a role and the women have a role. Okay? Society rewards those people who fit their roles well, i.e. Jackie O again, you know. She was a mother, a wife, and you know, that's the epitome of society rewarding someone who fits the role of what she or he is supposed to do. But if you don't fit the role, like I said yesterday, there's hell to pay if you don't fit the role. Homosexuals don't fit the role. They don't support anybody. They don't protect women. They have sex for nothing.
They don't put all their eggs in one basket.
They don't put all their eggs in one basket.
Yeah, but lesbians fall into the same category.
Absolutely.
Don't they, on the converse, because of their fact that under great many circumstances, they're not permitted to be recognized as a...
Absolutely. I don't think society likes lesbians any more than it likes gays. Yeah, right.
Which is unfortunate, but that's the way it is.
Yeah.
The thought crossing my mind is, if you'll pardon the expression, is Madison Avenue taking some, apparently, i.e. the advertising industry, mm-hmm. taking some emotions out of the, thoughts out of the society person and blowing these up as how the roles are supposed to be? And is that the definition that we are establishing?
No, this stuff is old stuff. This is ancient stuff. This has been going on long before America came on the scene. Now, Madison Square Garden, they'll take a piece of it and blow it up. You know, like, it really bugs me to see that commercials and advertisements that say a man should spend a fourth of his salary on an engagement ring. They actually say a fourth of your salary is supposed to be spent on an engagement ring. Now, that's Madison Square Garden. That's Madison Avenue.
The game's wearing a fight right now.
That's Madison Avenue. But the reality is that, you know, it's ancient stuff that the man has to prove that he can provide for this woman and their family before the woman will grant him sexual favors.
He's got to give her a 3 month salary.
Yeah. Women, it's ancient stuff that women hold out sexually until they get something from the man that says, I will be here, but I will not only be here, I will pay, I will protect. So, and that's performing. We get back to the three P's that I talked about yesterday. Perform, pay, and protect.
Are those pursued?
Well, pursue. Okay, pursue, perform, pay. Pursue, the man has to pursue. The man has to
perform. That's protect as well.
And he has to protect and he has to pay.
And there is a sense in which this is old stuff, but this is also our society's way of dealing with it. If you take sort of anthropological view of some of these things, I don't know whether you saw that there was a very interesting series, I can't remember what came out, it was called Millennium or something like that. I'm not even sure what the title of it was. But what they pointed out was that human societies have had to figure out ways of balancing three kinds of needs. One is passionate love, which is completely disruptive of society. People just break out of no matter what and go off into the sunset, abandoning kids, spouses, whatever. On the other hand, you need some economic security and you need some way of raising children. And most societies have come to some way of balancing that. Now there's some that are, for example, of one kind of society in the mountains of Nepal and Tibet, where land is the premium. It's not wallet. There isn't enough land to support families. And in fact, if you divided up the land among the kids, the place, everything would fall apart. What the solution there that folks hit upon is polyandry. Essentially, only one male is going to get any of the land. And basically, so that basically all the brothers have to share the land. And they do it by sharing the wife. So the woman marries all of the brothers.
Sounds like a male-dominated society.
Well, it actually isn't. It made it begin. But the point is, women have the choices there. They usually choose who they want to love. But part of the bargain is that they have to accept all the brothers. And the reason is, the economic side of that one is, if we divide this up, we're all going to starve to death. We've got to all stay together. And there's a whole host of those. But I think what we're seeing is the Western European...
There are all kinds of variations on that theme. There are, you know, polygamous societies where men marry groups of women, but it still depends on that man being able to support those women. It has nothing to do with intimacy. Mm-hmm. It has everything to do with him being able to support those women, the same way it is what you mentioned. It has everything to do, it has nothing to do with intimacy, that this woman gets a chance to enjoy a whole family. What it has to do with the fact is that those brothers have property. And as long as they have property, they have...
But they also would say that there's two other factors. That they have. There's the property, economic, survival side. But there's also the taming of pure eroticism, in the sense that whatever organization or society one thinks of, that can still strike one unexpectedly and destroy whatever organization you've got. And on the other is the responsibility for children. Somehow children have to be raised. And all of these balances that work, the societies that didn't succeed don't still exist. Balance there.
But his thing is that, you know, we take that and we call that male dominance. Mm-hmm, right. We call that male power. But he says, look at it. Is it really male power? Mm-hmm. You know, is that really power? So, you know, we have to look at that. Were you going to say something?
I was going to say a lot of things. I don't remember what, if any of it's important anymore.
Oh, okay. I have something to say. Is that when you read European or Western, Northern European, Western culture, there's a concept of you got God, and then you got the church, and then you got the father, and then you got the mother, and then you got the kids. I mean, there's and chivalry, and mm-hmm. there is a hierarchical order to things, and you know, the man becomes a knight. He's got his lance and his horse or whatever, if he's in his armor. And that was the time when I thought male had power. He's got his kingdom, you know, and whatever, and he protects. You know, he's the same kinds of things. But there is a sense of, you know, you don't want to jeopardize this person's ability to fight and protect the kingdom. And it's very much hierarchical. You don't question authority. There's an authority structure here, and you don't question that authority. You respect that authority. It seems like in our culture in the last, I don't know, 50 years, that's been undermined. I mean, the women's movement has said there's another way to deal with authority. In fact, authority is corrupt. You question authority. You don't allow this hierarchical structure is not good for our society. The old boy system, where men were able to keep control of society around decision making and all the status of who does what. All the, you know, the doctor is the male and the nurse is a woman. A lot of that stuff is getting undermined and broken down, and I feel like a lot of the men are under stress as a result of that. There's been a shift away from a hierarchical authoritarian structure.
Well, yes and no. womanist theology, womanist, which is different than feminist, mm-hmm. accuse feminist theologians or feminist people mm-hmm. of being white middle-class women who want a piece of the white male middle-class
action. Don't change your hierarchical system, just get your piece.
Just get your piece of it. Yeah. You know? And also another thing Warren Farrell says is that we're fighting for, you know, women are fighting to be liberated and that sort of thing, but you don't see a lot of women fighting to go to war. That going to war is still an all-male thing.
Women
are going to war, but it's optional.
Since the Greeks are fighting, don't have any more wars. Stop the wars.
Women are saying stop the wars, don't have any more wars, but you know, we need more oil, you know, so we can run our cars.
That's what the women say. That's what I hear from them.
Relax. I think, I really agree with the analysis of this. But I think every society has a structure. I'm more concerned about how the maintenance within our structure, how can we bring more equity? How can I, you know, how can I be less defensive, emotional? You know, who can I talk to, you know, if I can't talk to myself? How do I take care of myself within the system?
Well, one thing to take care of yourself, number one that he talks about is that women need to take responsibility for initiating sex. That women need to take that risk, which we talked about yesterday. Women need to learn to be socialized to take that risk to initiate sex and to perform and to pursue and to pay. That one thing women can do is and that men can socialize their daughters to do is to take on that responsibility.
Good luck.
It's a catch.
There's more. And another thing is that men, he says over and over again in the book, is that women cannot hear what men do not say, mm-hmm. and that men need to express to women that, you know, to express their pain about work, to express the fact that maybe they feel like they're getting the raw end of the deal and whatever. That men need to express how they feel about women, how they feel about dating, how they feel about being men in this society. And the third thing is that men need to weed out women who don't hear them. The same way that women need to stay away from men who can't hear the word no, men need to stay away from women, weed out women out of their lives who cannot hear them when they express their pain, when we express our dissatisfaction with the system. His thing is, he says whining is a privilege, that stage one people didn't have the privilege of whining. Stage one life took place up until after World War II, where the issue was survival. And that when your life is about survival, there's no place for whining. But we're moving into an area of fulfillment. That's stage two. And in fulfillment, you can whine. It's a luxury to sit up and whine. But up until, for the most part, only the women have been whining. Only the women have painted themselves as helpless victims and have been allowed to whine. And he's saying he doesn't have a problem with that, but let us whine too. You know, let the men whine too. And don't punish us for it. Did I see a hand? Did you raise your hand, Mark?
No, but it seems to me, since you taught me, that the only way, from my perspective, the only way any of this is going to work is that women who want men to change are going to have to live what they say. The older I get, one of the most enjoyable things I like to watch is women who say, I want, for quote, for lack of a better way to put it, a new age male. Soft, expressive, comp-
passionate, not just out for as many conquests as he can achieve, but I really thrive on watching these same women attach themselves to men who don't fall into that program. So as women say they want this new type of male, you don't see them connected to one. You don't see them connected to one who gladly says, I'm going to stay at home in a garage and I'm going to make a birdhouse. I'm not going to provide what society considers a financial reward for any purpose. Yeah. I'm going to do my thing, whatever my thing is. How many women do we really know who are married to men or are committed long-term to men monogamously in that relationship? And the blame also falls on us men. How many of us men are willing to give up and recognize that certain men aren't going to fall into the perceived notion of masculine, manly, powerful, etc.? And will we be able to give up the fact that we think we are superior to them because, A, we are either more muscularly strong, able to do more manual jobs, or etc.? So both sides of the street are going to have to change their mindset on this whole issue that Farrell loves to rant, right?
Well, that's what he says. He says, and I said this yesterday, is that women can do their part by choosing men who are like the men they want to marry, rather than choosing the man who's the supporter, the man who's the killer on Wall Street or in the corporate room or whatever, and then trying to turn that man into a sensitive man.
Yeah, Mark's comment about changing, women want men to change, is that the point? To change mankind or to change womankind into something that we think would be better, or to learn to accept each other for who we are? Because the reality is you're not going to change. You may make some adjustments, but sooner or later, you're gonna be who you are at some point if you have any integrity whatsoever.
Well, he's saying you change by your choice. You change by choosing the person that you know, that you respect and want to be with, and pursuing that person.
That sounds to me like growth and development, mutual growth and development, rather than changing to please someone.
Well, that's what he's saying.
He says, like, you want to grow. Change.
Yeah, but that's
growth is another word for it.
That's what he's saying. He's not asking you to change. He's saying you can change by choosing somebody who's like what you want, who fits your
philosophy. Yeah, but I'm responding to Mark's comment if women want men to change, or the converse, if men want women to change. That just isn't going to happen.
But isn't the third option to change there. The relationship, not necessarily the partners? You negotiate and are conscious in a way that lets a different kind of relation happen without thinking that you're changing either of the individuals.
Well, not if Farrell's right and we have different fantasies.
But we have different fantasies.
Some fantasies to some degree, both of them and anything.
But the male fantasy also has one of the things why men don't commit, is that the man's fantasy is having a young, firm woman. And when his wife is no longer young and no longer firm, you know, the fantasy fades, you know. So that's part of it too, and you know, dealing, as long as you're at home with your bag of chips watching TV, you know, you can fantasize about all the young, firm women coming up to share your chips. But, you know, the reality is that once you get into a relationship sort of thing, and he's saying that women don't give men credit for the fact that an awful lot of men give up their primary fantasy. And society expects us to give up our primary fantasy. But women don't let go of their primary fantasy, which is more security. And while the man is dealing with the fact that his woman has gained weight and she's not as perky and beautiful as she used to be, the woman is still saying, I want more. We need a new roof. We need this. We need an addition. We need that sort of thing. Yes, sir.
I think it was New Front that I just saw the cover of Calvin Paulson recently. That said, the fault line under many modern marriages, one to marriage one having sex with another. So it almost says, hey, there's something going on here that's changing the men relationships, and what do they do with is it really commitment? Is it really the fantasy with only one? Of course, it's the other. Because women have these same things. Is there something in society that make up the men and women that may bring them together? So I thought that was really interesting. And the other thing about the woman that I was saying, the comment was, you know, men need to become civilized. Give up the family, become civilized. Then they would all live happily.
But at the same time, you know, the men who are rewarded the most, you know, it's like the princes never ran off with the conscientious objector. The princes ran off with the king who could, or the prince, who was willing to kill for her and the kingdom, you know. And that's the reality that all men live with.
But didn't men create the myth to begin with? That's part of the problem.
No.
Because who writes all these stories? Who spreads this lore throughout the land?
Those are women's stories. That's part of women's porn, you know, soap operas. The district attorney, the lawyer, the doctor, who's in love with the beautiful, you know, young sister.
But that's current 20th century pulp fiction.
No, I'm talking about history.
Well, okay, let's take Arthurian legend. Arthurian legend is spread by men, not by women.
But what's going on in Arthurian legend?
But men slaying dragons to save the fair maiden has been a story that's been spread by men.
But men are...
Women, of course, have succumbed to the myth.
No, not necessarily. Women are rewarded by the myth.
What about the Book of Ruth?
Okay, what about the Book of Ruth?
Well, it skips this poor, foreign girl who should be an outcast who was rescued by a wealthy landowner.
She married up.
She definitely marries up in the second marriage and provides the offspring, who will provide the ideal king for the nation.
I'm concerned. I don't think it matters so much who started the game. And I don't think it's fair to blame women, because I think about my wife, and she says a number of these things to me as far as her fantasy. But most of what I do is a response to the tape that's already in my head. Yeah. She doesn't have to tell me very much of what she wants for that fantasy. I'm out doing it anyway, because that tape started before I met my wife. Mm-hmm. So, it's more global than blaming. You know, it goes way back, like you said. And so I think I need to work on myself more than being concerned about this woman, although I need to be careful of what I respond to or how I get hooked. But I can't blame her, because it's in me.
Pharaoh's thing is not blaming women, nor blaming men. His thing is to see, we oftentimes take society as it is, and feminists have said that men have the power and women don't. And all he's saying is, look at what we're calling power. Men have called dying for women power. Women call that power. Pharaoh says, that's not power, that's death. You know? And all he's saying is, you know, who has the power here? He's not saying that women have more and men have less. He says we equally have a certain amount of powerlessness. But our power depends a lot on how well we fit into the roles of men and women.